I was telling you about a property that we bought yesterday morning. In fact, my son-in-law brought me this property. My long-haired rock star hippie guitar banging son-in-law Bobby. Every once in a while, when he gets the urge and he needs money, he goes out and finds a deal. And this one he brought to me just yesterday morning. And I went down to the seller's home with Bobby, and we put a contract on that property yesterday morning. And the numbers are very simple. Seller has an appraisal for $3 million. He has a debt for $2.1 million. He needed to get out. He was only 1 month behind on this thing, but he knew he was in trouble, and he wanted debt relief. He asked for $75,000, and I agreed to give him $75,000. However, not now. I told him, when we sell the house and when we get cashed out, you'll get your money. Until then, I will buy your property, I'll take over your debt, and I will start making your payments in 2 months, and we will sell the property and cash out of it at some number above the $2.1 or $2.2 million. You'll get your $75,000 when we get paid. And there's a prime example, probably a higher example than most of you are going to get into, probably a number that scares the heck out of you. But remember, I did not raise money to buy this property. The debt was already on it. It came with a $2.1 million debt. I did not have to qualify to assume it. I simply had the guy will simply deed me the property, and I will start making payments on his debt that will stay in his name. It's important that I get this across to you, because this one has gone to defy conventional wisdom, and you must understand this before we get through these lessons in order to be able to go out here and do this, because there are so many thousands and thousands of people out there who will gladly give you their home if you just let them. And happy to leave the debt in their own name. And we're going to get to the definition of that and what a pretty house is and how to pre-screen them and how to know who to deal with and who not to as we go through the lessons. So we'll probably auction this house. We'll have a real bona fide auction. We won't sell it for $3 million. In fact, my guess is we probably won't get more than about $2.5 million at an auction. So we'll bring in $2.5 million with a cash buyer. We'll pay off the $2.1 million debt and pay the seller what we owe him, and Bobby and I will keep the rest. That ought to keep him busy for about another 4 or 5 months before he has to go do another deal. And the fourth way of a four on the profit centers is the lease option. When we can't get people to deed us the property, we may agree to have them lease option it to us. They'll lease it to us with the right to buy it, and with the right to put a tenant in the buyer in the property until the tenant goes out and gets qualified for a new loan. Now, in number three, when I get the deed, I own the house. It's my house. When I leave that house and that title transfers, I leave as the owner. And number four, when I leave the house, I do not own the house. I have a lease on the property with an agreed-upon purchase price, which is usually the loan balance, and I have an option to buy it for that. So I have a lease with the option to buy, and, of course, I am granted the right to sublet or put another tenant buyer in the property. So I will lease it for what's owed on it, and then I will sell it for what it's worth, and my incoming rent will cover my outgoing payment. I get a monthly deposit up front of several thousand dollars, a monthly cash flow, and then, of course, I get the difference between what I agreed to lease it for and what I sold it for when my new tenant buyer goes down to the bank and gets a loan. That could be months from now. It could be a year, two or three from now. But in the meantime, I just keep making money on a property that I have controlled and still don't own. And number five, of which we better spend some time on here because it seems to be the end thing out there right now, especially on these big luxury homes, is options, O-P-T-I-O-N-S, options. In the world of options, we don't have the right to put a tenant buyer in the property, but we also don't tell anybody we'll make a payment on it. We option it for price A, and we sell it for price B. Very simple. Price B, of course, hopefully is bigger than price A because the difference is our profit. That's exactly what Marco did on that house. He optioned it for $4 million, and he auctioned it or sold it for $5.6 million and sold some other furniture and a boat with it, and altogether netted $2.4 million on a property that he optioned and then auctioned. Optioned and auctioned. Marco had $100 in that property, no risk, no promises, no monthly payments to make. And in fact, he didn't even have any to pay any advertising because the auctioneer paid the advertising to get the people to come to the auction. And incidentally, I would imagine that it's obvious that you don't have to do but one or two of those a month to where you don't have to worry about making a living anymore. So let's go back. Number one, retailing. Number two, wholesaling. Number three, get the deed. Number four, lease options. Number five, options. Number one and number two is the ugly house business. Number three, four, and five are the pretty house business. Two totally separate businesses within the business. In number one and number two, our objective is to buy the house cheap. We must get it at a deeply discounted wholesale price because it needs a lot of work. In number three and number four and number five, we don't have to buy the house cheap. And in fact, we could literally pay retail price plus for the property and still make an awful lot of money based on what I'm going to teach you in the next upcoming lessons. In number three, number four, and number five, we will either take over debt or take control of the property. We will not create new debt normally. In number one and number two, junker business, got to buy it cheap. Number three, number four, number five, got to control it or own it with very little cash up front, and the house is in excellent condition or close. Sometimes they need a little cleanup, but we call that the pretty house business. The pretty house business means no rehab, no major work. Houses come in excellent condition. There are three reasons why the pretty house business can and will generate about 70% of your potential profit in the quick turn real estate business. Number one, when I'm dealing in the ugly house business, I'm dealing with lower priced properties. Lower price, of course, is relative as to where you live. In San Francisco, a cheap junker would be $250,000. In most other cities, a cheap junker would retail in excellent condition, below $100,000. So it's all relative to where you live. And it really doesn't make any difference where you live. To be honest with you, you'll make more money if you work in the higher dollar properties and if you happen to be in an area where the properties sell for more than $100,000. In fact, that's the second reason why there is more money in the pretty house business. In the ugly house business, since you're dealing in the lower end of the market, you're going to be dealing in smaller dollars. In the pretty house business, you're dealing in the pretty houses, you're going to be dealing in larger dollars. And I discovered a long time ago that the more dollars you waller in, the more stick to you. Ron's rule. When I teach you how to waller in the higher dollars, as Marco did, without risk, without writing checks, without guaranteeing debt, without worry about making big monthly payments, you'll discover that the more zeros that come with the sales price, the more zeros come with the profit check. So the more dollars you waller in, the more stick to you. So in the junkers, you're dealing with lower dollars. Pretty houses, you're dealing with higher dollars. In the junkers, you're dealing with one paycheck. You're in, you're out. Whether you're wholesaling or retailing, you only get one check. Pretty house business, you can and will be dealing with multiple streams of income. Sometimes you'll get paid now, sometimes monthly, and sometimes on the back end, and sometimes other paydays you didn't plan on. Multiple streams of income are always going to produce more than one stream. And lastly, when you're dealing in the pretty house business, there's 25 times more pretty houses where you live than there are ugly houses, no matter where you live. And so that's the pond with the biggest fish. But I don't want anybody to believe that I'm recommending you don't deal in the junker business, because here's the rub. You can't find pretty houses without finding ugly ones. And you can't find ugly ones without finding pretty ones. What far too many people do is they make up their mind they're going to focus on one little old narrow niche of the business, like finding junkers, and they won't know what to do with a pretty house when it comes at them. Literally, they throw away a dollar while trying to make the dime. What I want you folks to do is to learn the real estate business, regardless of whether it's pretty, ugly, free and clear, leveraged to the max, north, south, east, west, in foreclosure, out of foreclosure. I don't really care what the condition is with the property when it comes, as long as you know how to analyze whether it's a deal or not, create a solution to get the seller out, and another solution to get the buyer in. When you can master that craft, you've become what I call a transaction engineer and will reap the benefits of the real estate business and not go through it with blinders on. So let me go quickly over what is a pretty house and how you profit from it. And remember, I'm going to open it up for questions here when I am through. So get your questions ready. Be prepared to write them down. What is a pretty house? Well, it's a house that doesn't need a major rehab. It's a house that you might spend a little bit of money on. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, if you're spending less than $5,000 on it, I would call it a pretty house. Spending more of that, more than that on it, it gets over into the rehab arena. And how do you profit from a pretty house? It's very simple. There are several exit strategies and entrances that you will use. When I say several, actually not that many. And here's some good news for you. There's really only two or three ways that you're going to wind up buying properties that will create 90% of your revenue. So if we focus on the stuff that's going to create the most checks the quickest and eliminate all the creative financing stuff that just frankly puts your brain in a tizzy and keeps you so screwed up you don't know what to do, then we will probably get some checks coming in quicker because we're going to stay with the basics that work over and over and over again and will literally is about 90% of your business. And one of those basics is you're going to learn to get the deed. If you go get the deed, somebody gives you their property, you take over their debt, and remember that can be whether they're in foreclosure or out of foreclosure. And fortunately, we're at a 52-year high in foreclosures right now all over the United States. Canada's not quite that bad, but they have more than their share as well. And I know we have some Canadians on the phone here. And incidentally, for you Canadians, I have a lot of students up in Canada doing very, very well. And what we will discuss in these lessons works almost identical in Canada as it does in the United States, except you got a few different terms that you got to learn, but the business is exactly the same. I've done live training in Canada, and I've got students up there making well over $1 million a year with what we're going to discuss during these lessons. So how do we profit? We get the deed. That means we own the property, and we put a lease option tenant in it. Sooner or later, that lease option tenant will buy. That means we get money from their deposit. In fact, Donna and I got a deed on a house yesterday in addition to the big one. The big one my son-in-law was involved in. This one Donna got yesterday. In fact, I haven't seen the house, but here are the numbers if you want to write this down to use it for an example. Donna bought a $95,000 house here in Jacksonville, Florida. That's even on the low end here. A $95,000 pretty house in a pretty neighborhood that needs absolutely no work. Someone called her on one of our ads, and after talking to that person, she discovered that there was a $71,000 loan against the property. In fact, I think it's a VA loan. A $71,000 loan on a $95,000 house. That loan has a $640 a month payment. The individual was current on the payment, but had transfer orders and had to leave town and just didn't want to bother selling it. So Donna asked the individual, "What do you want?" He says, "I just want out. If you can come take over my loan, you can have the house." Obviously, it didn't take her long to figure out that that might work. So she went out to the property and she got the deed on the property. It needs nothing. So, and frankly, folks, I know this might be new to you, but that's kind of a normal deal. You will discover that your cities are plumb full of those kind of deals, where you can get, in this case, we got, $24,000 worth of free equity in this property just because we helped somebody out quickly and solve their problem. So what are we going to do with it? We're going to put a lease option tenant in the property. We'll put it on the market for $99,900, its new market value, if my market agrees. You see, I never sell a property for what the market for what most people think it's worth. I sell it for what it's about to be worth, and we're going to discuss that when we get into the selling houses mode. So I'm going to put it on the market for $99,900, and I assume, if normal, we're probably going to get somebody to come along with somewhere between $4,000 and $10,000 worth of upfront cash to put down on a non-refundable option deposit. In other words, we're going to advertise the property to the open market, lease purchase. That means come live in my house and pay rent until you get around to buying it. In the meantime, we'll give you an option to buy it for $99,900, and of course, whatever deposit they put down up front will be applied directly toward their down payment. So when they get ready to buy, they're not losing money. Whatever they gave us as their deposit will come off of what they owe the day they purchase the property. Of course, if they don't purchase it, they will forfeit it. They know they will not get it back. In fact, that's normal. You don't get deposits back. When they give me that option deposit, they're giving it to me in exchange for the option or the right to buy the property. So we figure $4,000 to $8,000 up front. I figure that the property will rent out for enough to at least give us a $300 a month positive cash flow. We bring in $300 more than we're paying out on the payment. And of course, when they buy on the back end, there's a profit of approximately $18,000 to $20,000 in cash that'll come from the difference between the $99,900 they owe us and the $71,000 we owe out. And so there's a good little example right there of how fast and easy it is to make money by getting the deed and lease optioning the property out to a tenant buyer. Now, we just got that deed yesterday, and after we run a title search on it and put the thing on the market next week, I fully expect we'll have a lease option tenant in that property by the end of next week or the end of the following week at the very latest. So, we're in and out of this thing within a couple weeks. Now, we're still not out of it. I'll own the house, and I'll own it until my lease option tenant buys it. And truthfully, I don't care if they ever buy it. Here we are with a house that I've got nothing in. I've got no personal liability on. I did not make any promises that I couldn't keep except that I would make that $640 a month payment, and I'm most happy to when I know I can collect somewhere between $900 and $1,000 worth of rent. And whenever my tenant buyer buys, I'll get a check on the back end. Keep in mind that every month the value of the property goes up and the loan goes down. My tenant's paying off the loan for me. And as of yesterday, I can depreciate a house that I purchased, even though I don't have any money in it. Uncle Sam says I can depreciate it and take a tax deduction simply because I own it. Okay, the second profit center in pretty houses is get the deed and cash out of them. You see, I could just as easily have gotten the deed yesterday and then put the property on the market and sit around until somebody comes in and go qualify for a $99,900 loan. That means that I get my money now. Downside is I'd have to make payments until I cash out of the property, and frankly, my profit on that deal, if I decided to get the deed and cash out now, would be much less than if I get the deed and put a lease option tenant buyer in the property. So I chose the easy way, which is also the most profitable way. The third way to make money in the pretty house business is to option the property and cash out, as Marco did. He optioned a gorgeous home, and he simply auctioned it, which produced a cash buyer 30 days after the auction. Or, of course, I can option a beautiful house and just put it on the market like you would any other house and find a qualified buyer to come to closing. Very, very common, and that means you get your money all now with no risk or no monthly payments on your part. And, of course, the next way is to lease option it from the seller because you can't get ownership and then sublease it to a tenant buyer. They call that sandwich leasing, where you agree to pay X price and you sublease it out for Y price, thus creating a monthly a upfront option deposit of several thousand dollars. You see, whether I get the deed or whether I just lease option it from the seller, my exit strategy would be the same by putting a lease option tenant in it. So I have the same paydays, upfront several thousand dollars, monthly spread, and then back end spread between what I leased it for and what I finally sell it for. And I know I'm going pretty fast, and don't worry about it. We're going to go through all of this stuff step by step. I just want to let you know what you're in for here, and I'm trying to pave the way to show you how you make money in this thing, so you'll know why you want to pay very, very copious attention, take notes, and start implementing this stuff as soon as we can. What does it mean to get the deed? It just simply means that the seller is going to transfer ownership to me. I don't really get the deed. We have to create a new deed. It's just a very simple form with about five blanks on it. Every single time ownership transfers from a seller or a vendor, for you folks up there in Canada, I have to put a piece of paper out in front of them, and when they put their signature on that and they hand it back to me, I now own their house. So in reality, a new deed is created every time ownership of a property transfers, unlike a car title. What do I mean by subject to? Simply means that I'm taking ownership of the property subject to the underlying loan. In other words, there's only two ways to take over debt. I can either assume it or I can take it subject to. Subject to is a national term that is used throughout Canada and America. It means that I'm not assuming it. If I assume it, I have to have somebody pull my credit report, submit an application, and wait for somebody's permission. If I take it subject to, I wait for no one's permission. The only person that can stop me from buying the property is the owner of the property or the seller. No lending institution or no human being on earth can stop a seller from giving me their property simply because it has a debt on it. The lender has the right to call the loan due. They do not have the right to stop the transfer of ownership. They have a lien against the property. They do not in any way own the property or own any interest in the property. They do not have the right to block the sale. However, they do have a paragraph in the mortgage that says if they want to, they can call the loan due if the property transfers. Well, that's called a due-on-sale clause. In fact, that's an investor's best friend, contrary to conventional wisdom. Can they call it due? Yes. Will they call it due? Probably not. Why won't they call it due? Because the last thing on the planet a bank wants is a piece of real estate. To a bank, real estate is a disease. To take that property back creates problems for them, which I am not going to have time to discuss during this lesson. It creates a non-performing asset where it's a performing asset as long as somebody is willing to make the payments. You should also know that I'm going to get the seller to sign what I call a CYA letter, clearly disclosing that the bank can call the loan due, and that if they did, that I'm not responsible. I can't stop them if they want to. And so I want to make sure that that seller clearly understands that they can call it due and it'll stay in your name and that they sign a little piece of paper stating that I told them that. That will go in my file. I call it a CYA letter or cover your assets letter just to make sure that I have something in writing that says we had a meeting of the minds. Now, before you get too concerned about that and before you spend a lot of time worrying about what the banks can do, you ought to know this. I have probably taken over 600 properties subject to. Not one single time has the bank ever called a loan due. But hey, who knows? On your very first deal, they probably will call it due just because it's you and you're special. Or maybe not. The truth is the bank wants payments. When somebody sends them the payments, they'll take the payments, and the last thing they want is the property. And in reality, if you think about it, if I get the deed on a property, I'm probably going to have it sold and cashed out before the bank ever even finds out that it's sold, number one, and number two, before anybody even gets around to caring, if they ever do, because truthfully, banks are loaded with people who really don't care one way or another. They're more interested in getting off at 4:30 and getting a paycheck. They have no personal interest in this, and frankly, they just don't have any reason to call the loan due. So, again, if they did call the loan due, it will not affect you personally. Your name is not on the loan, it cannot affect your credit, and nobody will be knocking on your door to collect the debt. Worst that can happen is they call a loan due, and all of the numerous ways that are available for you to fix that fail you, and the bank takes the property back. The reason we don't guarantee debt is to make sure we can never get into a situation where we have to worry about stuff like that. And I guess one of the biggest questions that a new listener would be asking is, why on earth would somebody deed you their property, leave the loan in their own name, and give you free equity? The answer is very simple. People do not give away free equity. They exchange it for peace of mind. I have probably purchased well over 600 houses subject to, not one single time, that I ever put a gun to anybody's head and say, sell me the house or you die. Every single time, I was there to solve a problem or they would not give me their house. And in fact, every single time, they called me. I did not call them. They asked me if I could buy their house. I did not beg them to buy their house. And I clearly stated to them that the only way I can buy it is if I take over the debt and the loan stays in their own name. Not only did they agree to that, but they signed off on it on my CYA letter. So before you work yourself up into a tizzy worrying why people do the things they do, I would suggest to you that you quit worrying about that and stop trying to psychoanalyze why people do the things they do and understand that you are performing a public service by allowing them to give you their house and relieving them of stress and giving them debt relief and giving them peace of mind so they can get up the next morning and know they don't have to worry about this house anymore. We'll get into that in more detail when we talk about pre-screening sellers. What is an ugly house? Well, I think everybody knows what an ugly house is, but I probably should describe it to you just to make sure you understand. And I'm talking about really, really, really ugly houses, not cosmetic houses. I want houses that need a lot of work. In fact, you can write this one down. The more the house needs in work, the bigger the profit check. I'm not looking for cosmetic houses that you can fix on a weekend here. In fact, the last thing I want any of my listeners to do is think about fixing properties with their own hands. That's absolutely forbidden. We do not do work on properties with our own hands. We get other people to do that when we do the work. And remember, when we're wholesaling a property, we don't touch it. But we have to, if we look for the ugly ones, that's the ones we'll find that we can buy cheap enough to allow us to sell them cheap enough so that our wholesale buyers will buy them. I'm looking for houses with a lot of rotten wood. I love rotten wood. It's cheap. I don't care where it's located on the house. I like for the shingles to be blown off and water to be coming through the roof and dripping down on the ceilings, and the ceilings to have fallen or because they're waterlogged. And I look up, I get artificial skylights. I like for the kitchens to be missing. I like for the toilets to be overflowing with human feces and the house to be infested with rats and roaches and bugs and dead animals of all kinds. And I can like for them to be dead just about 5 days so the aroma is just perfect. I want the house to stink to high heaven. In fact, gentlemen, if your wives will go in the house with you, it's just not ugly enough. So I hope that describes ugly so that you can picture it in your mind. You know, I'm looking for really, really ugly houses. You will soon discover that repairs don't cost a fraction of what you think they cost. And in fact, what looks like it costs $25,000 to fix, $10,000 or $15,000 will fix it. And once you understand that they don't cost as much as you think, you'll be able to put yourself in the path of opportunity by quickly analyzing a property. Quickly, I mean it does not take much time to determine what a house needs for repairs. And I'm going to go through some of that on these lessons as well so that you can literally just take a look at the property from the outside and pretty much tell what the repair costs are, enough to make an offer on the house. How do you profit from ugly houses? Very simply, you either wholesale them, which means you flip them to other investors, or you buy them, fix them up, and retail them yourself. In the ugly house business, our focus is on buying them cheap. Got to buy them cheap, or you're not going to like the deal. In the pretty house business, our focus is on taking over debt or controlling the property. In the ugly house business, if we buy them, we have to raise capital. We either raise capital by wholesaling them to a buyer who brings in the capital, or we raise capital by getting them financed ourselves and renovating them ourselves. In the pretty house business, we're buying properties where the debt already comes with the property. When we're getting the deed on the property, the debt's there. We just take it over. We don't have to go worry about creating debt. We don't have to raise money. We just take over existing debt like I did on that house this morning. In fact, two houses yesterday. Or we control the property with a lease option or an option. In either case, it is not our responsibility to go raise capital. And if you're sitting here wondering, where am I going to get the money, think about that. I didn't need any money to buy a $3 million house yesterday. So we got to get over that, and you can rest assured that one of our lessons is going to be on where to get the money during this session. But know this, whenever you buy a property, you must always get free equity or know how to create free equity shortly thereafter. If you cannot get free equity when you're purchasing a piece of real estate, or you don't know how to create free equity based on what you know, you have absolutely no reason to buy a piece of real estate. And I don't care what market you're in. I've got students with markets all over the country. Some of them are going up at a very high rate, but we do not buy properties betting on the come and hope they're going to appreciate. If we don't get free equity the day we buy it, you shouldn't be buying it. And you're going to discover that it's very, very easy to get free equity in real estate in my world. We're going to cover every single step in detail on going through all of the things that I've just described, buying and selling both pretty houses and ugly houses, as best we can in this series. And, of course, I mean, I don't have the option of training you live on this series, but if you're interested in live training, we have that available as well. And you can take part in any time you see fit. We cover every aspect of real estate investing, for commercial, residential, and all kinds of opportunities that are involved in real estate investing. So if you're interested in that, you can go to our website. In fact, I'll give you the contact information right now. You can reach me at ronlegrand.com. That's Ron, LEGRAND.com. Or you can go to, we have a website that has a special association of ours that is just loaded with benefits that I'm not going to go into right now that you can take part in. And go to goffn.com. That's goffn.com. And take a look at our Financial Freedom Network. And I think you're going to quickly see that that's something you're going to want to be a part of if what I'm talking about tonight interests you. And you can always call our office at 800-567-6128. 800-567-6128 and get information on anything, anytime you choose.